Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hey, y'all, it's Tom here. Just a reminder, the Pack Your Knives is part of the Count the Dings network. If you're following the Black Lives Matter movement closely, definitely check out Bomb, the Black Culture podcast on Count the Dings, with a new show called Wednesday Service from recurring guest, now host, Naima. Search B-O-M-M wherever you listen to podcasts. And also definitely check out the Count the Dings podcast feed, where you'll find our bad movie show called Cinephobe, the Dad Pod, which I'm on weekly, and Friday Mailbag, something for everyone. And also, if you want to support Count the Dings, you can definitely do that at patreon.com/countthedings. Join the hundreds and hundreds of people who are Patreons there, patreon.com/countthedings. All right, something for everyone. Now it's time to eat. Pack your knives.
This is Pack Your Knives. I'm Kevin Arnovitz.
And I'm Tom Haverstraw.
Tom, we've been looking forward to this episode for years. We've wanted to get into the guts of the show, the people who really are doing it from behind the scenes. You don't see them on camera, but they are the brain trust, the inspiration, the people who make the trains run on time. We have Tara Seener from Magical Elves. She is executive producer of Magical Elves. These are the people responsible for developing the show and bringing you the show every week. Tara, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you guys?
Doing excellent.
We're great. We're great. Deneen, how are you?
Great.
Oh, man. We have been just flabbergasted with how good Top Chef season 17 was and how great the contestants were. Melissa King, in my book, is the GOAT, the greatest of all time ever on Top Chef. But before we get into all that, Top Chef season 17 All-Stars, we will get there. But Deneen, as the executive producer who has been since episode, or I guess season one, since 2006, you've been working on the show, moving up the ladder from a PA all the way to a showrunner. I got to ask you, Deneen, how did you become a part of Top Chef? And who is the person who came up with the idea of Top Chef that you know of?
Well, I believe that from my understanding for Top Chef, it was that after the first season of Project Runway had finished airing and did well, that Bravo requested that Magical Elves do a cooking version of Project Runway. So the idea came from Bravo, and then Magical Elves, Dan Cutforth and Jane Lipsitz created what, you know, Top Chef would be, along with Shauna Minoprio, who was the first season showrunner.
This is very gracious of you, because I thought the ironclad rule of Hollywood is never give the network credit. as the producers, you're always supposed to take the credit, and vice versa, right? Like the network takes all the credit and the producers were just sort of these hired guns.
No.
So that's the origin story of the show. It was, hey, let's do Project Runway for food. Let's get really capable people who already know how to do a professional competition show, or a competition show based around an art or a craft or a skill. And it clearly worked.
Yeah. Yeah. It was awesome. And I luckily, so the reason that I got on the show, or how I got on the show, actually, so we shot it in 2005 and I had graduated college the previous spring and moved to Los Angeles, met up with some college alumni who were kind enough to, you know, tell me, send me your resume, I'll try and help you get a PA job, you know, on a show. And they sent my resume out to some friends and stuff. And it happened to get passed to an AP who was on the first season of Top Chef. And that got me an interview with the production management team. And they ended up hiring me. And that was my first job in Los Angeles, actually.
It's amazing. Like, now you're almost pushing 40. And like, that's how long the show's been on. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Like 15 years. Like, you can go from being basically a 22-year-old to someone almost 40 and over the duration of the show. And I mean, are we correct in the sense that, and granted, we are biased because we are mega fans. I mean, the show can exist in perpetuity, right?
I think so. Yeah. As long as the judges want to do it.
Hey, Deneen, so we've been keeping this under wraps for a while, but it's time to alert our fans. We have a big announcement here.
Oh,
Kevin,
okay.
We are going to do a Top Chef season 6 rewatch on Pack Your Knives. So we are going to do exactly what we did for Top Chef season 17, 16, and 15. And we're going to rewatch every episode of season 6, which is Las Vegas, which Tom Colicchio refers to as the best season ever. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our fans believe it's the best season ever. It's also got Brian Voltaggio. It's got Kevin Gillespie and Jen Carroll from this season. So I wanted to ask, and Tara, you've come on just a little bit later after season 6, but I want to hear it from you too, is what makes those characters or that season so special, Deneen? And why do you think, did you know working on season 6 Vegas that this was going to be so special?
I would say it felt like that when we were shooting it, yes. I think it had a lot to do with the talent of the chefs, and that there were, I mean, it just seemed like, you know, anybody could have won in a large, you know, like a really large group of the chefs were extremely talented. Even people who went out very early, they came in with a lot of cred and a lot of skill. But then also pair that with being in Las Vegas, where we have access to casinos who can get us access to, you know, some of the world's best chefs and, you know, just a variety of different challenges. I think it was a lot of fun. And it was the first time we had ever done an elimination quickfire. You know, we were playing around with the format a little bit for the first time in that season. We had high stakes quickfires, so there was like large cash prizes available. It was a lot of fun.
Yep. I mean, the show was obviously, it's character based. The format that you just referred to is, in many ways, it's genius. And the fact that you can do a new season with a new cast, have the same general format, it speaks to sort of the endurance of the show. What is the most common way quickfires and elimination challenges get greenlit? Like, I'm interested, is there a writer's room like there would be on a drama or a sitcom where it's like, okay, we got 16 weeks, that means 14 quickfire challenges, or do you get presented first with a series of venues? Like, we need to work in Rupp Arena and the Kentucky Derby. Like, how does – I mean, just starting from nothing, like, how does a season of challenges and elimination challenges and venues just get hatched?
It was a combination of what you're talking about. Yeah, our writer's room, I guess you could say, is our challenge team. And so it's we have challenge producers. So in the beginning, it's myself, my co-EP, and then three challenge producers and some associate producers. And we all spend a couple of weeks, you know, researching where we're going and, coming up with ideas and, you know, yeah, we're going to Kentucky. We have to do something with Churchill Downs. You know, we're going, you know, I think a lot of things kind of just naturally present themselves because we're going to a new place. But then also when we go and when we go to the city for the first time and we're scouting, you know, a lot of times we talk with tourism to guide us where they think is exciting or new or interesting or off the beaten path, or, you know, also what is key, like we can't miss things. And it's just talking to people, talking to chefs, talking to locations and finding out what the locals feel, you know, is important about their city, but then also kind of keeping in mind still the top chef, you know. Mm. You know, the show and what we like and what works.
Tara, what is the secret to having a good challenge or the secret to having a good quick fire? What is your favorite one, whether it's recurring idea or concept, or what is one that just always seems to work?
Oh gosh. Well, I mean, I can tell you from this past season, my favorite one to work on was the one where they were on the phone talking to their loved ones. Oh.
It's incredible.
It was a wonderful idea. You know, also working in a sponsor too. All the pieces aligned. It was a very clever challenge. It was a very energetic challenge, and it also brought the chefs out of their shells. So for me, the best kind of challenge or the best kind of quickfire is one where the chefs are just innately in it. And they're either struggling or they're having a great time. They're having great communication with whoever's around them, whether it's on the phone or whether it's with the chefs around them. But, you know, to really make the challenge interesting, and I think for the viewer, it's got to itself become dynamic. And, you know, I think the challenge team over the years has really done a great way of, if it's the same structure, at least making it a little different where you're still, you know, the chefs are still on their toes and they're still needing to do that extra bit to make their dishes better, stand out, stuff like that. So those for me are always energetic and dynamic.
Yeah. Deneen, I think one of the things that I love, the quick fires that I love is the kind of like that game of telephone. I can't remember when it was, but almost like you're blindfolded working in teams. Team. Yeah. The tag
That's
team.
Where actually, the first time we did that was in Las Vegas. So you'll see that in your season 6 rewatch.
Oh yes. That was like my favorite thing. It just, cause you had to collaborate, but almost like be inventive. There was a game of telephone involved. I love those sort of ones. The telephone one that Tara mentioned, like that one, I just love that.
Yeah, that was fun. And so that is also, you know, obviously a fun part of the show too. Like, even if there is a sponsored or branded challenge, we can still have a lot of fun with it, you know? And I think that's a great example. I think that in Seattle season, the first time we wrapped the entire pantry in foil for Reynolds Wrap was a lot of fun. You know, like, you can kind of just have fun with those things. And I think that's what's fun about the quick fires in general is, yes, sometimes there's immunity at stake, and so that's important, but also you can just have a lot more fun because, especially if it's not, you know, elimination quickfire, nobody's going home from it. So,
is there a quickfire that fell flat that you thought was a great idea, but in reality did not work?
Oh, you know what? I thought it would be a lot more fun, but I think it went a lot quicker than we expected it to. In Kentucky was the, Fort Knox, bouillon challenge. You know, we're just having a little fun with that one. And, the clues were, maybe a little too easy for them. You know, we tested on a few people to see who could answer them, and it took other people a lot longer. So I don't know. It's hard, but we, you know, it's always a gamble, I guess, when you try something like that.
Yeah, no, I want to ask you about Restaurant Wars, because I don't know that there's a particular stunt on any competition reality show that it is more defined, the show itself, that is more synonymous with the mm-hmm. show. I mean, you guys, we see it like when Padma invariably announces it and like the chefs go crazy, right? Like, cause it's just, it's like why it's the Super Bowl in many ways. Obviously the finale is the Super Bowl, but it's really, it's maybe the All-Star game.
It's the All-Star game.
Like, yeah, it's like, I'm sitting around when are we going to get to eight? Because so the origin of that, I mean, that actually in some ways is not like this. I mean, it's not this creative, brilliant idea. It's obvious. Like, hey, the restaurants are the very bedrock of what this industry does. But I'm just curious, sort of like, it just is such a hit. Like, it is, even people who don't watch the show know Restaurant Wars. Like, all you have mm-hmm. to say, and everyone knows exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, how did that start? So was it like, hey, we got to do it in episode 2? No, we got to do it later at episode 8. Was it just the logistics of making sure you had two teams? How do you make sure it's not too gimmicky? Cause I know we had Kevin Gillespie on the show a couple weeks ago, and he's like, I mm-hmm. hate Restaurant Wars.
Yeah.
Cause it's just, how do you open a restaurant in 24 hours? It's ridiculous. It removes the integrity of the whole restaurant opening business and kind of, you know, makes a mockery of that idea because you can't do it in 24 hours, yeah. But it's, fans love Restaurant Wars.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's interesting because I actually think that Restaurant Wars spawned the pop-up industry in a way. You know, people were not doing pop-up restaurants like they were before Top Chef was doing them, you know? I don't know that the show started out thinking that Restaurant Wars was going to be like this thing that we're always going to do. But because it was so popular, definitely felt like we had to keep it. It's always just, and yes, it's ridiculous, but you know, it's a competition show and a lot of the challenges are, you know, pushing you to your limits for sure. And that's part of it. But it is always interesting to see who can shine in that situation. And, you know, it's interesting because it's never our intention for them to fail. It really isn't. And I know people don't believe that.
Wait. Cooking outside in Denver in the snow, that wasn't sleeping in three feet of snow.
It wasn't supposed to snow. It actually was hot out. It was hot out the week before, and there was a crazy snowstorm that came through like literally the day before we went to shoot there. So that wasn't the plan. That was Mother Nature.
And look how well Carrie did. Carrie excelled.
All right. Like, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but you're telling me electricity cut on a party boat is just something that happened in the course of like life?
It absolutely happened. And you would not even believe, we sent out texts to go help. You know, we had the houseboat techs go out and working on it, and they couldn't figure out. And you know what fixed it? Our culinary producer folded a LaCroix box of water and propped it underneath some motor that got everything back up and running. I swear to God. It was like, and it took hours to figure out, but that's what happened.
Like, I don't want to be a Top Chef truther, but I'm sorry. Some of these, like these sand traps are pretty deep. It's funny. So I'm sure you guys and you've heard my little rant about Restaurant Wars. I just think Restaurant Wars is so pure. Like, I'm just the armchair quarterback. I'm the know-it-all. But I don't think you got to screw with it. I don't think you need 12. I don't think you got to declare the restaurant in advance. I kind of miss the sort of ego jockeying this season where, there are four people sitting around a legal pad and it's like, no, let's do this. Let's do this. But I think Restaurant Wars is so pure in its brilliance that I will put in my request, or not my request, my show note, that I don't think you got to do anything to it.
Yeah.
All right, there's my piece.
I hear you.
What do you guys look for in a contestant? Casting this show obviously has to be, along with the structure we talked about, the challenges, casting the show is crucial. Like, if you have boring people, it's going to be less interesting. I imagine you have to obviously account for talent, but sometimes I'm sure the best chef in the kitchen might not be the best contestant and vice versa.
Yeah.
And how do we get Kevin Arnovitz to be a chef contestant?
Oh God, no, I'm not there yet. Give me another 2 years.
Then maybe Master Chef.
Yes. Home Chef.
Yeah. It's definitely a range of things. You know, we definitely do rely a lot on talking with past contestants, past guest judges, reaching out to people for recommendations, because we want people who others in the industry vouch for. I think that, they're known in their city, or they're getting write-ups in Food and Wine, or, that kind of thing is important. The casting team does an amazing job. Sometimes I'm like, I don't even know where you found these people, but they're amazing and can't wait to see them. But definitely talent, personality does play into it, but not always, because we've had some people who are not super, A-plus personalities, but they're just lovely people, and that's fine. So it's just finding the balance and the mixture, and diversity in their cuisines. That also is important, because you don't want everybody cooking the same thing always.
Do you have a inherent desire to have a heel on the show?
Not a heel. No, I would say a comedic relief, perhaps.
Okay.
I think there, it's always nice to have somebody who can bring some levity to,
like a Stefan, for example.
A Stefan, I think, a Katsuji.
Katsuji,
he maybe great example. Was an instigator, but he was funny, And I mean, Stephanie was so fun to watch this season. I thought she was hilarious in interview.
She's amazing.
I was going to say, I think some people even surprise us too, as the season begins, and for us in post, we start learning who all these people are. We kind of watch their early interviews to see, get a vibe of, all right, who do we anticipate these guys kind of evolving into? And then Fatima, no idea she was going to be the absolute funny, dry delight that she turned into. I mean, she was definitely entertaining and she had some high points, but man, when she really got comfortable in the interview, she was the go-to for that levity, for that comedic moment. That's just an instance where we weren't expecting it.
Yeah. This season was interesting because I think a viewer often wants a little conflict, throwing someone under the bus, which has now become such a parlance of the judges table, chopping block, because rarely do you go through a season where someone isn't throwing someone under the bus or accused of throwing someone under the bus. But, this season was devoid of a lot of conflict. I don't think it took away from the quality of the season at all. It might just be the sheer talent of the chefs and their likability. But I imagine in any reality show, it is nice to have a little conflict. We all love a good mano-a-mano or this person, little personality conflicts. Kevin gave us a little bit of that when they were picking out Chyna for Restaurant Wars. But I have to imagine that's something you don't want to be egregious or gratuitous about it, but you kind of want a teeny bit of conflict.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't hurt. I think on Top Chef, it's more about the competitive nature of chefs, where the conflict can come out of wanting to be the best, you know? But yeah, I mean, there's definitely been moments, but I also think some of those things can tend to get cringy, and I don't, you know, I don't know how far you want to take it sometimes.
Yeah. If it doesn't seem organic, it's just, as a viewer, you feel like you're being manipulated.
Yeah.
So I briefly worked on a reality show as a writer, for Showtime back in 2004.
What was it called? And
it was called American Candidate. It was like seven regular people run for president. It was the election year. And I mean, it was semi-successful. I mean, I think I'll tell you, one of the reasons I appreciate Top Chef so much is just, hey, we were doing okay. We had good weeks and bad weeks, but you guys are just like this machine. But one of the things, I got familiar with the lexicon and how contestants are sequestered. Mm-hmm. One of the things I want to know with you guys is the, and I don't know if you guys call it pre-cap, mid-cap, recap, the way we did, but the ability to get chef interviews that seem like they are offered in the middle of the challenge. Like, we'll be in the middle of the cook, and all of a sudden there's Melissa saying, all right, I've got all my ingredients here, but then the oven, you know, whatever it is. When are you doing those mid-cap? Are you grabbing contestants in the middle of the challenge to give a play-by-play, or are those recaps disguised as mid-caps? In other words, you get them after the fact to sort of walk you through it in present tense.
Yeah, it's after the fact, because I mean, some of these challenges are only 20 minutes, you know, we would never have time to actually get that. It's usually like the day after. It's not like long after. It's just, you know.
Yeah, because I imagine,
try to keep it fresh in their mind.
I'd imagine continuity is a huge part of that. Is we have to keep like hairstyles, outfits, and how big does continuity play into the confessionals to make it feel like it's a mid-cap?
Yeah, I think Stephanie might have mentioned this on her interview, that they had two interview outfits and had to wear the same hairstyle. You know, and that is true.
That's easy for Kevin and I, right, Kevin?
Yeah, we have no hair. We have no style. So there you go. What is... All right, the biggest crisis, and let's set aside COVID, which is its own, I'm sure, real challenge for you guys, both for the industry. It's been, I mean, particularly hard hit for restaurateurs and chefs. But biggest crisis Top Chef has ever encountered kind of mid-season, you know, Tom brought up the hazing of Marcel. I'm just curious, like when did the shit truly hit the fan in 17 seasons? What was the biggest incident?
Oh, I have to think about that. I mean, that definitely was a big deal.
You want to recap it for our listeners? It dawns on me that not everyone, like not everybody's a complete junkie.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately that was, it was after a great challenge. They were in a good mood and I don't know, they, decided one night they were all going to shave their heads. but then they decided and Elia did shave her head. They took it too far and tried to force Marcel to shave his.
So it turns into Lord of the Flies, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher turned podcast producer. And I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal, ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order. Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass-on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, little, hey, boy, how you doing? And Noodle's just like, yeah, whatever.
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
So other location snafus, like other, like,
oh, you guys? Yes. This, here, I'll tell you one. I've literally had a challenge where, you know, we've scouted this kitchen, the culinary team was there, and then we arrive on the day and we're about to send the chefs in to start cooking and find out that the kitchen's not functional. And
what do you
we
do?
Had to hold and figure out how to make it work. We were going to change locations, but our rockstar culinary producer figured it out, made it work, got some equipment in there that did work, and it looked like a normal functioning kitchen. Nobody noticed on camera. It worked out, but it took a couple hours to figure it out.
Besides the Colorado snowstorm. That one was amazing.
That one was crazy. I'll never forget this because it was my challenge. When I was an AP third season, we went to Aspen for the finale, and we had a quick fire that was supposed to be on the Frying Pan River. Eric Repair was there, and they were doing a trout challenge. And we had this beautiful location right along the river. And I went that morning before everybody got there to go get set and ready to receive people. And there had been a mudslide, and the river was the color of like terracotta mud, disgusting. And I was like, nobody's going to want to eat fish out of this river or look like they're eating fish out of this river. So we had to like completely find a new location on the spot. And it just so happened one of our lighting guys had been fly fishing on the property that we were using for another challenge. He's like, I was way back deep in there. There's some grassy area. We can just like trample it down. It's by the water. It'll look great. Everybody flipped their cars around. We went to this place. We like looked at a couple of spots, but then ended up going there. It was crazy.
Has there ever been a contestant mutiny, like where everyone just collectively said, we're not doing that? Like,
no.
Yeah. That speaks well of your governance.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, they ask questions and stuff for sure. But no, nobody's ever said not doing that that I can think of, like as a whole. No.
When we were at Restaurant Wars Kentucky, we were kind of taken behind the scenes. Becca, you know, chauffeured us around and gave us kind of the behind the scenes tour of the set. The thing that jumped off to me was the fact that I saw the chefs, but mm-hmm. everyone was like, oh, so did you know that so-and-so like got really far in the competition? I'm like, I didn't know who any of these chefs were. So there's no way I could remember who like Eric Agyapong was like in the moment. So I never really remembered any of the chefs, and it just smacked of there's such a big difference to when the show is running to what it is, what it turns into at the end. How often are the chefs interacting with the production team, or are there certain elements of the behind the scenes show that they will never meet in the, you know, the entire season, the shoot of the show, but are absolutely essential to making the show work?
I would say they rarely ever see me, to be honest. I don't really interact with them on a day-to-day basis. I try to keep separate. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of people that they don't necessarily interface, but they do see a lot of the same people, day in and day out. I mean, all crew for sure. They're around, like camera operators, audio mixers, all that stuff. There's producers that are on the floor with them. And they see a lot of the challenge producers when it's time for, you know, they have time where they can like pick plates and, you know, ask questions about the challenge and, you know, that kind of thing. So, they see a lot of people. But there definitely are people that there's a whole production side that's handling just, you know, getting people from point A to point B, the coordinators and transpo and all that stuff that they probably never will deal with on, face to face.
This is kind of a tangent here, but I'm curious, how do you find challenge producers? Is there like a college program that just has a great farm of challenge producers? Like, where do you find people to come up with these crazy ideas?
It's interesting because I think it's just there's a couple kind of producers, and it's the people who are creative and who are strong with logistics who excel in challenge producing. Because, you know, they're having to talk to locations and get and lock in like a lot of details around the challenge. Mm-hmm. But they're also, like I said, the ones helping to come up with the challenges. And it tends to be people who are interested in, you know, they might've been, in college or, had dreams of doing, you know, scripted television or something, might've been wanting to be in writing or that sort of thing. So, definitely have a creative mind. But yeah, it's just kind of finding out where people fall. And it usually, like, that's what we have associate producer level. You're kind of in this, you know, you're like the assistant to your challenge producer sort of thing. So it's easy to tell once you've done it, like, are you good at that? Is that something you even want to continue pursuing? Or is there a different alley that I want to go down?
Yeah, we pitched Tom a challenge, because I think so it's like we didn't get an answer we wanted from Dad, so we'll go to Mom for some advice here. Like, you know, we're sports writers. We spend a lot of time in media rooms. There's always this at basketball arenas, NBA arenas, and there's always this generally crappy media meal, right? And it can always be better, but they're not going to spend a lot of money on journalists, right? And we thought it was sort of like, hey, today, contestants, you're going – and probably even a quick fire maybe. Like, you're going to prepare – you know, a pregame dinner for these 12 hungry sports writers. There are a couple of parameters, like sports writers, we can't have food that's too messy, but most of them are meat and potatoes people, but you don't want it too heavy because then you've got food coma while you have to write and on deadline. And Tom was like, what's the challenge? What's the challenge? Like, I thought that is a challenge, right? So how would we modify this pitch?
How do we make it work?
If like how would we make it up to the quality of Top Chef? I mean, clearly we are not challenge producers. This is not what we do well. What would be the parameters of you're going to feed 15 to 20 hungry sports writers?
Well, I wouldn't do it before the game because I don't think that's that interesting. I would probably make it something that has to be handheld that you can do while you're writing with your free hand.
You could eat.
Okay, so that's interesting.
Kevin, that's a thing. That's a thing, totally a thing. I get
you know, on press row. Like what? Like yeah, because you have your computer there and you're on press row, and then like there's dinner.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's all right. That's a new wrinkle. Okay. Tom, we'll keep refining this. This is still like I don't know that I have a professional objective. I mean, I want to write a book at some point, but like this is kind of number two. Like, to actually sell this idea to Top Chef and get to be a guest judge.
What's something that our show has gotten wrong besides that? What's something that Pack Your Knives, if you've listened to the show, we talk about a lot. I'm going to just say it. Yeah. The review, I thought the Zapruder film that Stephanie was going to win Top Chef because of the way Padma says, you are a Top Chef. You guys must have been giggling at that.
Oh, I credit Tara with that 100%. Although I will tell you, I did learn from listening to podcasts a few years ago that people were like, I know who's going to win because I see Padma's eyeline. So we've been very particular about not showing her when she says it.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're like, they can figure it out.
Yeah, yeah. Because
my partner, Eric, actually was a modification of Tom's. Eric was like, I think a woman wins. I'm like, how can you possibly know? It's like, there's just this like go girl power thing about the way Padma says you are Top Chef. And, you know, Eric, he subscribed to that all season long. And I'm kind of like, yeah, I'm not buying it. And I have no idea. I mean, obviously it's a 1 in 2 chance. So it's not like he's clairvoyant, but it was just very fun in my house. It was just like, that was the conspiracy theory. You could just tell by the way she says it, it's a woman. And I was like, okay, I mean, maybe.
Yeah, we have to be so careful. We love putting like little Easter eggs in that kind of, we know what happens at the end that, you know, we get little joys out of as we watch. And it's like, oh, I wonder if anyone's going to remember this at the end. But, you know, because we have listened to the podcast, because we do know what people are paying attention to. And if there are trends or whatever, we're really, really cautious with teases, especially. And you know, we tried to change it up. We tried to have Tom, you know, Tom's version of it, which is, you know, one of you is going to be Top Chef. It still is exciting. But you know, it also takes out the danger of, all right, who's going to, you know, use, trigonometry to figure out who's in the eye line. But it's happened and people get really mad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's,
you
know,
like a team of people that work on that?
The intention. The trigonometry, yes, because math is not good for me. but yeah, I mean, you know, we pull throughout the season all the moments we think are big and fun and we'll make a great tease and we want people to see and remember and things that are really quintessential moments for our important chefs that are getting to the final five, final three. But yeah, those last moments really are, you know, as a team, we scrutinize. And then once everything is, you know, gone through the final polish where everything is up-res and we can see all the crystal clear moments, then we look at it again to make sure there's nothing that we're giving away. Mm. It is a big process.
I've got a thing that you guys conspiracy theorized that is definitely not a conspiracy. Even the chefs thought it was conspiracy, so I know they won't believe me. But Last Chance Kitchen, the winner of the three-person cook-off at the end.
Yes.
It would have been a two-person finale if Kevin didn't get back in. We had a plan in place. Like, it was definitely not planned. It was not, I mean, like, it was not predetermined, you know. It was 100% how Kevin performed. And if he didn't make it back in, we would have just had two people competing in the finale. That's why there were three this year.
So question, we love Last Chance Kitchen. You know, when it first got released, I'm like, oh, this is kind of gimmicky. Everyone's doing the, hey, we need a digital element. And then, I mean, there are weeks where I've gotten to the point now where the minute the episode's over, I'm going right to my Apple TV to get that app up. Like, I love Last Chance Kitchen. Is it the same production crew? Is it? Do you guys treat it as sort of part of the show as a whole, or do you have an entirely different LCK kind of challenge?
It's developers? Both. There's it's an opportunity for people who aren't necessarily running their departments to kind of run a smaller version. So it's like people who are under the department heads are kind of running Last Chance Kitchen, which is fun. So it's a lot of people get to kind of flex their muscle there. And I'm running it, but we do have another producer who is not a part of the main show challenge team, who has to basically come to all the challenges and know what's going on. And, you know, then immediately we were pitching ideas like, okay, this is why they're eliminated. What can we do? You know, kind of figure it out quickly.
Yeah. It's kind of like the G League, Kevin. And imagine if you have like these young up and coming executives or coaches, you kind of put them in the Last Chance Kitchen and let them blossom over there, I'd imagine.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun, and Tom has so much fun in Last Chance Kitchen that's what makes it fun, I think.
Yeah, he lights up. Like, you could tell that he loves that that show. So one of the reasons why Top Chef works is because you have Padma, Tom, and Gail. Mm-hmm. And I always wonder, can you guys script can you guys predict how certain chefs or judges are going to react to certain dishes, or like – Does Tom have a tell? Does Padma have a tell? Does Gail have a tell? Have you had to coach them about, hey, when you eat that dish, you can't do X, you can't do that eye roll, you can't do that thing anymore because it's a tell? Like, do you have to coach up the judges a little bit?
No, I think they're pretty good about keeping it close to the vest. I mean, I think I can tell sometimes with a look or something, but that's good. So, and sometimes you want to use it and sometimes you don't. And that's where Tara comes in, and she mm-hmm. gets to kind of pick and choose what makes the most sense in terms of keeping it, you know, not obvious if you want it to be obvious, you know?
Tom does this, like he's chewing on something and just says, thanks, chef. And he like has his like eyes kind of down and he's just like,
but he does that on purpose sometimes to throw you off. Oh. So sometimes he does that, but actually loves it. And then sometimes I will think like, oh, he hated that. But then then he'll immediately be like, that was amazing. So he kind of tries to play around with people.
Yeah, Tara, what are the biggest tells? Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I mean, then when Tom is doing that, it becomes challenging for us because then we've got, you know, the note of like, but it doesn't look like Tom liked it. Can we make him look like he liked it? And it's like, well, no, because he didn't make that expression. Sorry. So we just don't show him necessarily in that moment. And then we cut to him saying how much he liked it. If you really need all of that to jive. I think the Tom eye roll has become a thing of legends. You know, everyone seems to love to talk about the eye roll. He does a great eye roll. It's just not always present. So, you know, it really does become a really fine calibration that we do to make sure that we're leading the viewers to the right place without giving it too much away. So we want you guys to know who did well, who the judges are really liking, with just enough, maybe this person's the winner. Oh, I could see why this other person might win. Just enough, you know, give and take, but it really does, it does take a lot of effort to make sure we're using the best reactions, the best adjectives. You know, you guys have talked about this quite a bit. Food TV is something you cannot actively enjoy eating the dish at home. Yeah. So you're relying on them to explain it to you. So we're also trying to, besides telling you who's doing well, who isn't doing well, put in the right adjectives so you get what they're enjoying
about it or what they're not enjoying. That reminds me, Tara, when we went to Restaurant Wars, we got to see kind of, I don't know whether it was Deneen, you or someone else was talking to Padma in her ear, kind of like, hey, with little prompts of like, hey, ask this judge what they thought about the soup, just to kind of get some more conversation. So there is a bit of that where you're like, hey, the conversation really isn't popping at the table in Restaurant Wars. So let's get Padma to ask them certain questions. So there is a little element of like, hey, we need more of this, not necessarily scripted, but trying to get more conversation.
Yes.
Oh, I was going to say, that direction is definitely like, you know, a lot of times we like to let them have a normal, natural conversation because that's where you get the best comments. But, you know, if people are talking over each other, you know, I'll have to tell Padma, I'd be like, can you remind the table one person talking at a time, you know, take your turn kind of thing. Or, yeah, like you guys didn't talk enough about this element or this dish. So can you go back and talk about, make sure that everybody speaks about this dish, you know, because when you're eating five things at once, it's easy to kind of gloss over one and not pay enough attention to it. So that's kind of why, you know.
And to that end too, I would say Padma's an amazing, she's so good at her job. A lot of it is so natural for her to make sure the conversation is flowing and it feels natural. There's a couple moments too, where if, you know, we know that there's a story with John's soup. And, you know, we want to make sure that the judges talk about the soup enough where if there's something that we're following that potentially could be disastrous for him, you know, it's asking the question, what do you think of the soup, to see if anyone is noticing it. If no one else is noticing it, then it, you know, the story beat really doesn't go anywhere, which is fine. But, you know, it's also asking the question of, is someone going to notice it? Is this going to be the thing that's going to send him home?
In my house, it's not exactly a conspiracy theory, but it's not really, it's something between a conspiracy theory and a drinking game. But Eric and I aren't happy until there's a cutaway to a couple of gays eating at one of the challenges. Like, we insist this is a Bravo thing. This is clear. Because invariably it happens, and Eric and I look at each other. Excellent. The gays are back. Like, there's death, taxes, and Top Chef cutting to a bunch of two gays at a table commenting on food. Anyway, just kind of a thing that we have. It's one of our kind of cult items. It's there may be truth or non-truth to it, but it's just something we're convinced of.
We are a very inclusive show. We want to make sure everyone feels represented. And gays are delightful television.
We are good television, and we're the right combination of kind of, you know, really emotive about it and sufficiently bitchy if we have a critique.
Yeah, I think Eric didn't even watch the show, and when he went to Restaurant Wars, he was by far everyone's favorite person there. Like when he was at the table.
Right. The joke is y'all were so kind to invite us to the Lexington Restaurant Wars. And we sit down. Tom's there with his wife. I'm there with Eric. Just so you know, Eric does not own salt or a spatula. he's a wonderful dining partner, but I would say that maybe his knowledge of food, the kind of the anatomy of food isn't there. And sure enough, like the one clip you got of our table is Eric saying like the crudeau, you know, like whatever it is, like here he is critiquing Eddie, this wonderful chef at Laurel in Philadelphia. And we just got like, that's always been a punchline for us is like, there's Eric just, you know, kind of offering kind of a some shade to the crudeau. But yeah, that, by the way, that was, we truly had, I mean, Tom and I have been to NBA finals. We have been to All-Star games. We have been in the locker rooms of champions. I don't know that we ever had more fun than flying to Louisville in Lexington and getting to be part of Restaurant Wars. Like, that is the sticker on my suitcase I admire most.
Is there I know it's weird to talk about this in the COVID era, but is there a possibility of like, or do you do this already, is buying tickets to a Top Chef event?
We don't do that. We do sometimes do auctions for charity for tickets for Restaurant Wars.
Okay.
But yeah, no, we don't charge.
Because I'd imagine
I don't know if that's legal. I'm not sure. I mean, I guess it would be. I don't know.
I mean, why can't you? Well, I guess you'd have to sign all sorts of paperwork anyway. It's just there's a lot of leaks that you got to make sure you plug up on that. But
for sure.
So while we're talking, now that I mentioned it, how was producing this show in a socially distant lockdown era? What was that like?
Well, it wasn't like that when we were shooting.
Yeah.
We were done shooting before it happened, so we got lucky. But, you know, I don't know what the next season holds or will bring because that will be – I mean, we're still in the thick of it. So, yeah, I don't know.
Tara, what was it like post-production now?
Yeah, as far as post, it was actually an amazing experience too. You know, we still had maybe 5 episodes that we were still working on, including the 3 finale episodes. So some really big work that we figured out some sort of learning curve, got through it. And from, I would say, about 15 different locations, we were on Trello. We were on all different kinds of chatting devices. Yeah, we were on Slack. Found some really creative ways to communicate. Our post team was absolutely phenomenal in making sure that everything was flowing the way that we're used to. So we had to get creative, but it was incredible with just the way that the staff just kind of picked up and ran, even from home. You know, we had editors with children that, you know, the hours would become a little different because they had, you know, extra lunch time that they had the kids. And it was definitely a different dynamic, but it was phenomenal. And to the end, in terms of what we were able to produce, it's for me a marvel, actually, even just looking back to see that it looks like the show that we do in the office. And it's such an incredible testament to everybody's dedication and skill and talent.
Our last question is, you know, everyone gets really excited at the prospect of Top Chef coming to their market or the favorite city. Like, I did want to ask how you settle on a location. I imagine there's sort of tourism boards and tax breaks. And I'm actually really pushing for Atlanta just because A, it's my hometown. B, like everybody shoots everything in Atlanta these days.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine it's not a hospitable place. And it's also this great food city. So like I'm standing for Atlanta just because like, when are you guys going to get there? But how do you kind of settle on the locale?
It's a number of things, but definitely, you know, also has to do with, or at this point, it's like, where haven't we been yet? You know, major
Atlanta,
and Philadelphia.
Yeah, there's a number of large cities we haven't been to, and they're all over the country. And then the other thing too we think about is, you know, where we've been in the last season, 2, 3 before it, and can we bring regional diversity and something different? So we're not, because you know, a lot of the cuisine in certain regions tends to be very similar. So you want to break it up a little bit.
You have to do 2 southern cities back to back.
Back to back, right. Yeah, so that's kind of a thing. And we want to make sure that we're, you know, kind of hitting all over the country. Because you're right, a lot of people do have a lot of hometown pride about where we go and what we're showing off. And it does bring an extra level of enjoyment and excitement for the locals, I think, when the show's airing. But yeah, I mean, I think there's still plenty of places for us to go. So hopefully, you know, we'll be able to hit them all.
Is there any update that you guys can give about next season of Top Chef? Because I know a lot of people are worried about next season and how long a layoff is. Can you guys give us any update, any hint?
We're still figuring it out. but I'm pretty sure it's still moving forward, but you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you all so much for doing this. We've been wanting to kind of get into the guts of the show with the people who produce it forever. You are so good at your jobs. We might be biased. This happens to be our favorite show. I marvel at anyone who can produce something with so much longevity and endurance and like year after year. I mean, you said 2005. I was like, man, it's been 15 years. Mm-hmm. Like we're talking about like The Simpsons. essentially, you know? So thank you for joining us and giving us your time and your insight. And thank you for giving us a great show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so much fun. Thank you guys.
Kevin, when we do season 6, we might be having to call you guys again. To
for consultation, if nothing else. Yes.
Sure.
Yes.
Absolutely.
All right. Take us out, Kevin.
For Tom Haberstroh, this is Kevin Arnovitz, and this is Pack Your Knives.